Hello everyone, my name is Elijah Dale, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Secretary and Congregation. I was out at the 12th Hour in the Elgin, Texas. Today is February 22, 2024. We will start this service here. It'll be our third one for this Sabbath day. Then we'll start with a song and then a prayer, and then we'll go into 12th Symbolic Code number 5. It says, a study in typology. All right, it says, a study in typology. Twelve symbolic code number 5, 1944, B. Tejada. Our study for this afternoon is based on a statement found in Isaiah 41:21-23. Produce your cause, saith the Yahweh. Bring forth your strong reason, saith the King of Jacob. Let them bring them forth and show us what shall happen. Let them show the former things what they be, that we may consider them, and show the latter end of them, or declare things for to come. Show the things that are to come hereafter, that we may know that you are gods. Yes, do good or do evil, that we may be dismayed and behold it together. This is... Well, the Yahweh is challenging the world for the prediction of the future, for to explain also what bearing the past has on the future, that they may show that they are gods. For the challenge itself implies that none but the Yahweh knows the latter end of the former things. Now let us read Isaiah 41:4. Who hath wrought and done it, calleth the generations from the beginning? I, the Yeshua, the first and with the last. And with the last, I am He. For the Yahweh here propounds the question as to who has foreseen and declared the generations that were to come from the very beginning even unto the very end of time. Then he answers his own question, I the Yahweh, I am He. This scripture plainly shows that Yahweh has declared the generations of today from the beginning of time, and that the former things are significant in that they point forward or are otherwise related to the present or future events or conditions. With the help of this chart, I believe we shall be able to see a little of Yahweh's work, particularly in the respect unto how He has pictured the generations of the day and the generations of yesterday. Let us turn now to Genesis 3:15. And I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed it shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel. We cannot possibly misunderstand what the woman Yahweh meant in the scripture, for there was only one woman, Eve, then in the earth. In the presence of Adam and Eve and the serpent, Yahweh spake these words predicting the future outcome of Eve's seed and the serpent. Eve's children were to have their heel bruised by the serpent, the devil, and in return the children of Eve, the human family, were to bruise the devil's head, the serpent's head. Now, you know that even if one's leg were to be amputated, one can live on. But when one is decapitated, his life immediately ends. Yahweh predicted here that there were to be an enmity between Yahweh and good and evil all through time. And though the serpent would ruin the human family, yet the descendants of Adam and Eve were finally to bruise Satan's head. But you may say, Yahshua is to do that. I do not wish to dispute your word, but actually it is Yahshua through the human family that is to accomplish it. For in Jeremiah 51:20, Yahweh himself declares that Israel is to be his battle axe, his weapon of war. For with Israel will he break in pieces the nation. And though it is to be accomplished by the will and direction of Yahshua, yet Yahshua will do it through his people. And this way, his people who have been wounded by Satan will finally bruise Satan's head. To represent the period of the church history symbolized by Eve, we have assigned to her the first of the three sections on the chart. Next, in the time of the typology, we have Hagar and Ishmael, and Satan and Isaac. They too are types of the church, as you already know from the fourth chapter of Galatians. In this chapter, Paul makes it plain that Hagar was a type of the Old Testament church, the Jewish church, and that Sarah was a type of the New Testament church, the Christian church. With the first period symbolized by Eve herself, the second symbolized by Hagar, and the third symbolized by Sarah. We see that the church history is divided into three periods. In the first period, Eve period, there was a particular there's a particular line, save that of Cain and Abel, through which the seed of the woman was at last to bruise Satan's head. And since Cain, being Abel, could not become that line of seed, and since Abel was now dead, someone else would need to carry on the line of the righteous seed. Let us read Genesis 4:25. And Adam knew his wife again, and she bare a son, and called his name Seth. For Yahweh, said she, hath appointed me another seed instead of Abel, whom Cain slew. Yahweh appointed Seth to stand in Abel's stead, and through the line of Seth, it was Yahweh to carry on his purpose for the human race. Proceeding on unto the next period, we come to Hagar and Ishmael. Providence, you recall, brought Hagar and Ishmael into the home of Abraham. You well know the circumstances which brought it about. Yahweh had promised a son to Sarah, but years passed without the promise being fulfilled unto her, and she grew impatient ever the long delay. And in order to pacify Sarah, Yahweh permitted that Hagar become Abraham's wife, and Ishmael was born unto them. You can see that this arrangement was not a necessary part of Yahweh's plan. In fact, it was Sarah's plan, whereby she could at least vicariously have a son if she were not to have one of her own. According unto Paul in Galatians 4, Hagar typified the Jewish church, and Ishmael her children. Through it all, we see that it was Yahweh's plan from the beginning to have only the church born of the Spirit, the Christian church. But as in the case of Hagar and the birth of Ishmael, the Jewish church which was born after the flesh only and not of the Spirit came into being. Through the experience of Hagar and Ishmael, Providence, you see, wrote both history and prophecy, for it foreshadowed the coming of the Jewish church. After Isaac was born, trouble came into the home of Abraham, and Yahweh instructed him to put away Hagar and her son, for her son was not to be heir with Ishmael. But why did Yahweh direct Abraham to do this, if it were not an allegory? I do not believe that Yahweh did it because he wanted to be mean to Ishmael. I believe he did it because he was writing both history and also prophecy in this experience. If it is an allegory, then what is the meaning? It means that when the Jewish people, the children of the Jewish church, fail to be converted and reconciled to Yahweh, fail to be born again and become the children of Sarah, born by the Spirit, by the will and the power of Yahweh, which the miraculous birth of Isaac typified. When they failed to do this, they met with the sad experience, which was typified by the Ishmael and Hagar's being sent away from Abraham. It was Yahweh and the Antichrist who cast off the Old Testament church and her people, the unconverted Jewish people, so that the children of the Old Testament church should not be heirs with Isaac, the children of the New Testament church, for they have nothing in common. For this plan is said that the Jews that failed to accept Yahshua and thereby failed to receive the second birth shall therefore never, never have a part in the kingdom of Yahweh. But if the unconverted Jew shall not inherit the kingdom, certainly the unconverted Christian and the unconverted Gentile cannot be heirs of the kingdom of Yahweh. Are the following the Jewish church typified by Ishmael? We have next the church which originated with the people from the same nation, but who received the second birth, a birth that is impossible for a man to give, just as by the nature it was impossible for Isaac to be born to Sarah in her old age. Yahweh alone, through his spirit and his promises, can give the second birth, just as it was Yahweh alone who could make possible Isaac's birth. That is why Isaac represents the New Testament church, or the people of the New Testament church. Sarah typified the church itself. Sarah and Isaac together represent the New Testament church and her children. We have now discussed three periods. Number one, the period represented by the Eve. Number two, the period represented by Hagar. And number three, the period represented by Sarah. Thus, we have covered one part of the typology. Just as there were three sections or divisions of the church, so also there are three sections of the true priesthood. You know that the priesthood in the time of the Jewish church was a Levitical priesthood, and it was not in existence before Israel left Egypt. And it is not the true priesthood today. Before the Levitical priesthood, there was the Melchizedek, who had neither father nor mother, neither beginning of days nor end of days, and he was the priest of the Most High Yahweh, King of Salem, King of Peace. To him Abraham paid his tithes. Then the three sections of the priesthood lines up thus. Number one, in the period from Adam and Eve to the time of Israel, we have Melchizedek. Number two, to the Christian era, we have the Levitical priesthood. And number three, in the Christian period, we have the priesthood of Yahshua himself. So much for the priesthood. We are ready now to study the typology of the children of the church. To Eve was born first Cain, and Abel. Cain was wicked, and Abel was righteous. In the typology of the Abraham's two sons, Ishmael and Isaac, Ishmael, who taunted Isaac, was put aside, and Isaac was chosen. Then came Esau and Jacob. Again, one being evil and the other good. Thus we see through the types there were two classes of children in the history of the church, the good and the bad. In the case of Cain and Abel, Cain, who should have led out and the true worship, since he was the eldest son, chose instead not to worship Yahweh according unto his commands, whereas Abel was a true worshiper of Yahweh, because Yahweh accepted Abel's offering and rejected Cain's, he persecuted and slew Abel. This incident served to demonstrate the absence of the church leaders who were determined to lead Yahweh's people wrong and even resorted to modern those who refused to be led wrong. Next, when the time came, Ishmael and Isaac. Ishmael was the older, Isaac was the younger. But Ishmael and Hagar were sent away because they persecuted Isaac and Hagar persecuted Sarah. This friction and trouble in Abraham's home foreshadowed the trouble that came later between the converted Jew and the unconverted Jew in the Christian church at the beginning of the apostolic dispensation. Yahweh's casting away Hagar, who persecuted Sarah, and Ishmael, who persecuted Isaac, typified the casting away of the Jewish nation and his people that would not become converted to Christianity. In the experience of Esau and Jacob, we find still another allegory which carries the time of church history still further, as we shall see a little later. Of these twins, Esau was the older and Jacob was the younger. He was therefore Esau's privilege to be the spiritual leader of the family, and through Esau the 12 tribes of Israel were to come. Besides this blessing, Yahshua himself was to come through Esau's line of posterity. But because he was evil and held in low esteem, his birthright privileges, he lost them to his brother Jacob, who coveted the spiritual blessing. After the momentous transaction was consummated, in which Jacob purchased Esau's birthright for a bowl of pottage, then Esau reflected upon the deal and deeply regretted it, since there was no way for him to recover his loss as long as Jacob was living. He at once sought to persecute and kill Jacob. This is a circumstance that drove Jacob from his home and to another country. Now, if the expense of Jacob and Esau does constitute an allegory, where in church history does it apply? Since Ishmael was a type of the Jewish church, and Isaac was a type of the apostolic church, then we must look sometime into the apostolic dispensation period for an experience similar to Jacob and Esau, for they were Isaac's sons. Therefore, sometimes during the apostolic period, two classes of people were to be born to the antitypical apostolic church, the Seventh-day Adventist, one evil and one good. And we have identified that as being Brother Johnson and Denton Brunken, 1970, Gilead Center. Brother Johnson, the firstborn, the oldest, had the birthright. He brought forth creation calendar, restored the ordained system of true worship, and was told to teach my people my government. He had that position as the inheritor to be the progenitor of the righteous line here in the end time. He forfeited that in 2002-2003. He forfeited unto Jacob that coveted the birthright for the right cause. Before going further in the study of Esau and Jacob's typology, we need to spend a few moments on this part of our chart. which shows that the line of the children, people born into this line of women representing the church's history and the three divisions for the making up of the church there must be the mother, the agency which embodies the children, the people brought into the church, and the priesthood. These three constitute the living church on earth. First in the line of the children of Yahweh and the living church is Seth, who was appointed to fill Abel's place. After Seth was Isaac, whom Yahweh chose in preference unto Israel. After Isaac came Jacob, who obtained from Esau the birthright, which brought great spiritual blessing. Do you not see that one child from each of the three parents was used the tip of thy, the continuous of the children of Yahweh and the adverse house of Israel today? For the living house of Israel, represented also by the woman of Revelation 12, was in the existence from Eden and will continue until the time that the holy city receives the saints. These three good children, Seth, Isaac, and Jacob, were her seed, her children, through time, and it was through this line of the descendants that the kingdom temporal, the kingdom of Israel, was made up. For it took all three to make up the people who constituted the kingdom, for not any one of these types did it. But according unto the Revelation 12, the church was at some time to leave the vineyard, the kingdom, and go into the Gentile world. That's where it's at today. This phase of the church's history is not typified either in Seth or Isaac's experience. Only in Jacob's life do we find the type for it. Just as it was Esau's persecution of the Jacob that caused Jacob to leave Palestine, so also it was the persecution by the unconverted Jews against the apostolics which caused them to leave Palestine and go into the Gentile nations, or go unto the Gentile nations. It was the line of the Seth and Isaac and Jacob that made possible the kingdom of Israel in Palestine. But if the trouble that came between the Christian Jew, the apostolic Jew, and the unconverted Jew was the actual cause of the woman's leaving the kingdom and going into the Gentile world, who came into the Gentile world, was it the Isaacites and the Ishmaelites, or the Sethites, or was it some other? It was the Jacobites and the Jacobite period who came into the Gentile world. Therefore, we now see that the house of Israel is in the Jacobite period. We also are able to see from the further development of the Jacob's type that found this Gentile world, the living church, is to return to Palestine, just as the Bible prophesies that it will. We shall now devote a few moments to the study of Jacob, the type and relation to the church, the house of Israel, and the Antitype. When Jacob left his home in Palestine, while he was on his way to paddle it around, Yahshua met him, the son of Yahweh, and gave him his promises that he would be with him, and Yahshua fulfilled his promises. Likewise, when the house of Israel left the vineyard, Yahweh's promise was with her that he would not forsake her in the Gentile world. While Jacob was in Paddan Aram, away from home, he became very rich, and his household increased greatly. Then he was commanded to return home. So it will be today in the Antitype. The time will come when the church is to be multiplied and then return home. But when Jacob left his father-in-law's house and was on the way back to Palestine, you remember, that he had his great time of the trouble. For it happened before he reached Palestine, his homeland. He wrestled in the anguish all night with Yahweh. And it was then that his name was changed from Jacob to Israel. They are not now living in the antitypical time of the changed name, Israel, but we are living in the antitypical Jacob time. You might say that Jacob is a fleshly name, a name that does not spell either prince or saint. Why are we still in a time portrayed by the Jacob sin-denoting name? Because we have not yet started for home. When we start for home as did Jacob, we too shall meet with our time of the trouble. Even Jacob's time of the trouble. And at that time we shall become thoroughly converted to Yahweh forever, and our name will be changed as is foretold in Isaiah 61:6, and it will be a name that Yahshua himself will name. When we demonstrate that we are truly converted, then this great promised blessing will come to us. And when our name has been changed, this signifies that we are certain candidates for the entrance into the kingdom eternal. In our study today, we have traveled over the road. The house of Israel has gone through this long history. Our journey brought us through the patriarchal period, and then the temporal kingdom age, and on through the sojourn of the house of Israel and the Gentile nations. It has brought us into the place that we find ourselves now, on the verge of leaving for the kingdom eternal. Well, it says in Luke that the kingdom of Yahweh cometh not with observation, but the kingdom of Yahweh is within you. So if you have eternal life, then you have the eternal kingdom in your life, which also means that we are about to go through our time of the trouble and have our names changed, then to be accepted into the everlasting kingdom of the heaven which the Yahweh the Father is about to set up through his Son Yahshua with the 144,000 here on earth and the 12th third body car that we're in right now that shall last forever. For the next few minutes we shall depart from the overall application of the allegory into the living house of Israel through the ages, and let us also see what lesson there is in it for the Yahweh's church at this time. For the natural birth that Rebecca gave to her, that's it, to her twins, Esau and Jacob, symbolizes the church giving spiritual birth to two classes of people, one good and one bad. Since though, contrary to the established custom, the blessing was to be bestowed upon the younger, that he knows that in the latter day church experience the class which should receive the spiritual blessing will forfeit it in a favor of the other, the younger class. From one of these twins is to come the 12 tribes of the children of Israel, the spiritual children of Israel, 144,000 first fruit. When the time comes for the 144,000 to be born, the class represented by the Esau are to have first opportunity to realize the privilege of leading the 144,000 who are to usher in the kingdom over which Yahshua is to rule. When their sister White, the founder of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, first began her work, she had a vision concerning the gathering of the 144,000, which was to be the work of the church, and the terms of the allegory. Then the Seventh-day Adventist Church was traveling with the antitypical twins in which to give birth unto the Jacobites and Esauites, who are the ones that would be classed Esauites, and who are the ones that would be classed as Jacobites, the two people that are in the house of Israel, the Gilead Synod, County of Texas, were the place where these twin brothers lived, Esau and Jacob, Robert Scott Johnson and Elijah David. The Esauites would be those that are older in the Advent message, those that came first and led the Jacobites, the younger ones, into the house of Israel, and as it was, the younger all through the church history that cherished the spiritual blessings which the older ones should have possessed for themselves. So it is that the younger children in the Adventist truth, Yahweh's true church today, is to carry on the line of the living church, the others, the older ones, whose right it was by the birth to be the leaders of the 144,000 princesses, standing with the Lamb on the Mount Zion, are going to lose out. When the sister was first saw the coming of these 12 6,000 out of the 12 tribes that indicated that the church, the Adventist church, was traveling with them, and they were soon were travailing with them. Let's do it again. It indicated that the Adventist church was travailing with them, and they were soon to be born. From that time until 1930, revealed concerning the unemployed for thousands, since the Rod's message explained who are the 144,000 and announced that now is the time for them to appear, that we may know that they, as the Jacobites, were born, so to speak, from the time that the message came, that the Jacobites are not yet on the Mount Zion with the Lamb. Instead, they are in the antitypical path of the Ram, for Yahweh is sustaining them apart from the Esauites and the Seventh-day Adventist Church. That is why one part of the Adventists are in Washington, D.C., and the other part is in Texas. They are unable to get along together. That goes for today as well. It's the same thing today. Headquarters are in Silver Springs, Maryland, right next to Washington, D.C., for the General Conference to run the Adventists. And Elijah David is the head of the church here in Texas, in the South. According to the type we are studying, and also prophecy, the Jacobites are about to gather themselves and leave the Gentile nations to return to their homeland, Palestine. And on their way, they will meet Esau and have their name changed to Israel. Since Esau, however, did not go into the Gentile nations, but it was Jacob who left and came here. There must be Esauites also in Palestine. Is that not correct? Though it is true that we are connected with the Edomites and the Seventh-day Adventist Church, those who despise their birthright, and whom Yahweh would therefore take away, it is equally true that there are other Esauites besides, for the Esauites in the Seventh-day Adventist Church are not all of them. No, they are not all of the Esauites. In addition to the Esauites that are in the Adventist Church, there are Esauites in Palestine, and there are also Esauites in the other churches too. And from them, other Jacobites must be gathered. Do you not see that the Esauites are going to be enraged when the Yahweh's people, with the Yahweh's people, and give them trouble behind, going to be enraged with Yahweh's people and give them trouble behind, and a bigger trouble ahead, and besides all the trouble Jacob will suffer from Esau, he is also to have Laban running after him. Somebody typified by Laban will pursue antitypical Jacob for trouble. It is very apparent then that the Yahweh's people will have much trouble among themselves on the way and ahead. Trouble is what they face, but Yahweh will take care of them today as he did anciently. For he has promised that he will remove the Edomites in the church, and he has promised also to clear away the Edomites and all of the others that are in the land of the promise, and give it unto his people. Well, it says that if we had a representation of the Seventh-day Adventist Church here along with the Protestant and Catholic, a church representation, and if we could at one presentation show them the vast amount of the truth which we have been blessed with both from the typology and prophecy, they would be amazed and confounded, just as the woman of the Samaria who talked with Yahshua at the well explained, because he was able to reveal all that she had ever done, they too would ask where did these people learn so much about what is going to happen? Where did we get it? Who is the one that predicted all this? To find out the answer, we will read again Isaiah 41:4-20. Who hath wrought and done it, calling the generations from the beginning? I, the Yahweh, the first, and with the last, I am He, that they may see and know and consider and understand together that the hand of the Yahweh hath done this, and the Holy One, Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh of Israel, hath created it. What effect does all this truth have upon your heart? Does it not inspire written within you the consuming desire to possess the promised spiritual blessings that can be ours? Are you not becoming daily more intimately acquainted with the Yahweh and becoming hid away in Him, that you may be protected in the storm which will soon break upon the people? Those who prevail with Yahweh for His blessing will be delivered and no defeat. Okay, we're in the hour of trial. There's a little song poem here at the end of this study. In the hour of trial, Father strengthen me. This by base denial I depart from thee. When thou seest me waver with a touch recall, nor from thy dear favor suffer me to fall. With forbidden pleasures, with this vain world charm, or its sordid treasures, spiritual work me harm. Grant that I may never fail thy hand to see, grant that I may ever cast my care on thee. Amen. J. Montgomery, end of our study of 12 Symbolic Code number 5. Now this means end of our study. Shall contact us at the 11th hour call, number 11. Click on our audio. Okay. We're going to close now with a song.